T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
305 DGS, happy Friday. Man, just we're watching here on CNN Live as Ian, who just completely leveled Central Florida, has gone out to sea and is coming back into South Carolina as a Category 1 hurricane. It had downgraded to a tropical storm, and I think they always, you know, they get more energy over water than land. And it just, these pictures are just horrific. So many, like, St. Louis has a pipeline to Florida. Everyone has their favorite place, and I have mine, and they both got hit really bad, and it's just absolutely insane. What is going on down there?
If you would like to donate to Hurricane Ian Relief, you can go to odyssey.com/KMOX. There's a ton of links to different organizations who are helping.
I will do
the
that.
Red Cross, all sorts of different organizations. So yeah. odyssey.com/KMOX.
Yeah. Have you guys ever heard of a hurricane going, like, dying down and then picking up steam again? I've never heard of that.
No, I mean, I'm no hurricane expert, but I think it happens quite often because when they go over the islands that have mountains, it
breaks them up.
Breaks them up, but then they get back over the warm water and they so.
I guess I thought once it hit, then whatever the second wave was another one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like a different name. I guess I didn't realize it was the same name.
Yep. Nope. Trish Clock.
Brought to you by the Good Feet Store, comfort, energy, performance, and pain relief at the Good Feet Store. We're doing weekend review. A lot of interesting things happened in history this week, and I think a lot of Dave's crushes have birthdays this week.
Wow.
I think.
Bonus.
Yeah. Melissa Sue Anderson, was she one of yours?
Not at all.
Mary from Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, my God, no. Oh, and when she went blind, oh, it's the worst.
I liked her. Well, she's 60.
You got mad when she, got mad at her when her character went blind?
She was just like, okay, whatever, everything's about you being blind. Then she married the blind guy, and I'm just like, okay.
And then he regained his sight.
Did he?
Yeah.
I don't think I made
but
it
she
that
did
long.
It?
No, she stayed blind.
Oh.
How did he regain his sight?
I don't remember. He was in like an accident or something.
He got it back. Hit it.
hit the head right, just the right place. And
I think it was something like that.
The screen came back on, like hitting the TV.
All right.
Hey, he's really going in on that, isn't he?
I just think that's funny to think get in an accident and regain your sight.
Well, now I gotta Google it.
Oh, 62 years ago. In 1960, the first televised presidential debate took place in Chicago between John F. Kennedy and a very sweaty Richard Nixon.
It was really the beginning of the cult of personality. Before that, you saw pictures in the paper and I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican. But then you saw sweaty Richard Nixon and handsome JFK and Camelot. And from then on, we all expected that to be the president.
He declined to wear makeup, which was his first mistake, and that's why John F. Kennedy looked so good, and he didn't. Did you Google the Mary?
Yeah, he regained his sight in an explosion, so I was close.
All right.
58 years ago, in 1964, Gilligan's Island debuted on CBS, and of the seven castaways, only Ginger, Tina Louise.
Oh, yeah.
She's only Ginger still with us. She is 88, by the way.
I'm fine with that.
Also, 60 years ago in 1962, Beverly Hillbillies debuted on CBS. It was the number one show on TV during its first two seasons. I hated that show. I don't know why. I absolutely hated it.
What? Like, give me some context.
I just hated the opening. I hated the black
fact
and
that they
white
were Hoosiers.
Yeah, I just couldn't stand any of it. I was like, give me color or give me nothing. I just didn't like it.
Did you like Green Acres?
No, I hated that too. I'm
you don't like the fish out of water thing.
No. You liked Green Acres?
No, I hated it because Eddie Albert was so mean. Like the husband, he was just such an ass.
What about Hillbillies? Were you a Hillbillies guy?
I was okay with it. Okay, so I've had crushes on strange women. And I mean, you had Granny. But
I was going to say, not Granny.
Was it Granny?
No, don't tell me Granny.
Worse.
She had gumption.
No. And by the way, Granny was like 32 or something.
Right.
What's Ellie Mae.
Yeah.
Nope.
Zsa Zsa Gabor?
No, I loved her, but she was like a sex symbol. No, Mrs. Hathaway.
I don't even remember her.
Mr. Drysdale's secretary, whatever, assistant who... Did she love Jethro? Yes, she loved Jethro. That's what it was.
We all love
what
Jethro.
What was the theme song for the Beverly Hillbillies again? I can't remember.
A little story about a man named Jed.
Oh, right.
What was the theme song about the guy that gained his eyesight from the explosion?
Here's a little story about a man named Adam. Once he was blind, then he got into an explosion. And now
good.
He's back, baby.
This week, this former teen heartthrob turned TV producer turned 64, Sean Cassidy, the Do Run Run. I used to love Sean Cassidy.
Hardy Boys.
Yeah, Hardy Boys. And he just like remade a bunch of songs, but everyone thought they were his.
Yeah.
Because I remember my sisters had an album and I was like, oh, Sean Cassidy. 52 years ago in 1970, this song peaked at number 16 on the pop singles chart.
Oh, rubber ducky, you're the one.
I wanted to play this.
You
so
make
bad.
Bath time lots of fun. Rubber ducky, I'm awfully fond of you.
I love this song. It really
Turn
did.
Turn it up, yeah.
It really did hit the charts at number 16. I'm not lying.
When I squeeze you, you make noise. Rubber ducky, you're my very best friend. It's true.
I have quite literally never watched an episode.
Of Sesame Street?
Ever.
Not with
was
the kids.
It not on, nope. Was it not on when you were little?
I'm not that much older than you. Yeah,
I know. I just didn't know when it debuted.
Yeah, no.
God, I loved it. I mean, I thought, like, I loved... Snuffleupagus.
Mm-hmm.
I love Grover. I love Cookie Monster. I like Bert and Ernie.
We could be here for a while.
I know.
I used to think, and I think I told you this.
Oh, go ahead.
I used to think you could, like, if I could get into the TV, yeah. I would be
you
on
just
Sesame
go
Street.
Go to Sesame Street.
But then
right.
I was, like, worried, well, how do I get back? So I never tried it.
I think that Trish as a little girl must have been the cutest thing ever. What did you think of Elmo when Elmo came out? Because it was obviously then you were done with Sesame Street,
right.
But were you like, what is this?
No.
What are they trying to do?
Because I think Elmo's adorable.
Okay,
so I was
there
fine
you go.
With him. Yeah. I mean, I haven't kept up. Like, I haven't watched any episodes since then. But I just remember being so happy about it.
She's binging Sesame Street.
I also told you my other story when I had the Bert and Ernie suspenders on.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Bert on one side, Ernie on the other. That's when I think I said Bernie and... What did I say? And I
yeah,
screwed it
like,
up.
It was like Bernie and Ernie.
Screwed names up. I can't believe that.
I was always very aware when someone was trying to sneak education my way.
I'm not learning this.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 Electric Company?
No, I'm familiar with their work. And Zoom. I know all of these fake shows.
Zoom, I loved Zoom.
Well, just, what did you watch?
Gilligan's Island and stuff that didn't teach me anything.
About girls. What? Taught you about girls. Hot girls. Tina Louise. 36 years ago in 1986, Bobby Ewing, spoiler alert, returned from the dead on Dallas. Because all of the events from the previous season were a big dream. It was a big, huge episode.
Were people mad?
Big, huge cliffhanger.
I was about to ask that. I watched it back then, but I don't remember. Because we didn't have social media. So if someone was mad, it was like your mom and that
yeah.
was it.
Right.
But I bet if that happened today, although that's the first time that anyone ever pulled that.
That's what, it was like the pinnacle of the cliffhanger and oh my God, what's going to happen? That's how I remember it, at least. 67 years ago in 1955, the World Series was televised in color for the first time. It was the Yankees beating the Brooklyn Dodgers 6-5 in game one. That was in 1955.
That's cool.
Yeah. I would have lost this bet. Jerry Lee Lewis, I did not know he was still with us. But anyway, he's 87 this week.
What?
I'm shocked.
Yeah, me too.
I guess he lays low because of the whole, like,
scandal
cousin thing. Yeah.
Yeah, he married his 13-year-old cousin.
Something tells me Jerry Lee Lewis isn't that worried about what we think about him. So
he did what?
He married his 13-year-old cousin when he was 22.
You know who his first cousin is?
No.
Jimmy Swaggart, the
really?
Preacher.
Yeah. Lots of birthdays. Barry Williams, Greg on the Brady Bunch, is 68. Whew. And 53 years ago in 1969, the Brady Bunch debuted on ABC. And I didn't realize at the time, I was just watching reruns, I think. Like, I started watching it, I was never watching new episodes. This person I remember from when I was little, because I think she was always on Solid Gold. Do you remember that show?
Sure did.
Solid Gold, the Solid Gold Dancers.
Oh, yeah.
Marilyn McCoo is 79.
Billy Davis Jr.
Yeah, one of the Fifth Dimension.
That was a great show. It wasn't a great show. But
Solid Gold? I loved Solid Gold. The Gold Dancers?
Was it just dancing? Like,
no, it would be like, and here's Barry Gibb with his new hit. And
yeah, like a variety show,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, lip sync it, and then here'd come the Solid Gold Dancers.
Gold Dancers were great. One more birthday that I think might be Dave's crush. Angie Dickinson.
Oh, yeah.
She's 91.
Again, fine.
33 years ago in 1989, I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong one. 40 years ago in 1982, the Tylenol poisoner claimed his first victims. There were a total of 7 deaths in the Chicago area over a 2-day period before authorities determined that extra strength Tylenol capsules had been laced with cyanide. They never found a suspect, but that led to safety seals on all of our bottles. Mm.
Isn't
I vaguely
crazy
remember that.
Before that, you could just open up a bottle of anything in a store and put anything in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
They never caught him?
No. Not according to this. 9 years ago, which seems like it was just yesterday, in 2013, the Breaking Bad series finale aired on AMC.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you believe that was 9 years ago?
Yeah, that's crazy.
It took me 3 times starting that show before I could finally get into it. And then, obviously, it was great. I don't know why... Took me so many times.
I still haven't.
It's not always the easiest show to watch. I mean, I think it's my favorite, but it's tough to watch sometimes.
Couple more birthdays and then I'm done. President Jimmy Carter is 98. Mark McGwire, 59 this week. And Johnny Mathis, 87. This Week in Review.
I like letting it hang. 323 DGS on Camo X. Happy Friday. A couple of weird stories. I loathe gender reveals. They're so stupid. No one cares what sex your baby's going to be. And people just do the dumbest things, you know, cannons that kill people, stuff like that. So the most recent dumb thing someone did is they went into a beautiful protected area of the woods to this beautiful waterfall that everyone enjoys so much. It's about a 50-foot waterfall, and they poured blue dye into it and then took the family out there, and they're like, okay, ready? And then they poured buckets of blue dye that came down. Now the waterfall is blue, and everyone's like, it's a boy. And then it killed all the fish.
Wow.
And all the wildlife that drank out of it. Just like, you selfish pieces of crap.
I hope they're getting some sort of punishment or fine or something off that.
Get this. So I used to be a divorce attorney. Never even had this thought before. But welcome to 2022. Man and woman are getting divorced. I believe the man, I don't know. It probably doesn't even matter legally. Anyway, there were boudoir photos taken of the wife. You know, like sexy photos, topless photos, the whole bit. So the guy, I guess probably just being a jerk, said, I want those. Mm-hmm. And she was like, we're getting divorced. And the judge ruled he has a right to them. So what you are going to do, lady, is take them back to the photographer, and he or she is going, I believe it's she, is going to edit them in such a way to take the, make them a little more tasteful. Take the nipple out, or take the this out, or take the that out. But your husband is still going to get your nude photos because he has a right to them because they were created during the marriage and he helped to pay for them.
Wow.
Wow? Right?
Yeah, wow. He's just being a jerk.
And so the photographer is saying, look, put me in jail. I don't want to do this. This is not what I do. I don't want to be involved in this. This mm-hmm. is completely separate. This is sickening to me. And people are going crazy, of course, on both sides of it. And
well,
so,
you couldn't make that photographer do that if they don't want to, right?
Right. You're not going to. I mean, yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. Like
a court order can't extend to like a third party like that, right? Or
I mean,
can they?
Sometimes. But in this one, a case of first impression like this, I don't see the sheriff showing up and saying, get out your airbrush.
Photoshop, yeah.
But how about that? And it could go the other way, too. You know, it could be, you know, the man who took nude photos of himself, what have you. But, yeah, that your ex could have a right to your sexy photos.
Is it because, I know that you said he paid for some of them, but even, let's say he didn't pay for them, but they were made for, with the intent of giving them to him.
Yeah.
So that kind of theory.
Yeah,
that,
yeah. I mean, it's just a physical possession. It just happens to be a very sensitive one. But I guess the judge looked at it and said, I really can't draw a distinction between a family album to Florida and a family album that you guys did together of boudoir photos. And he seems to really want them. He feels that he has some ownership over this and he wants the memories. And
okay, but why can't you? Like, I get it. It's like, well, the precedent is an album of photos is an album of photos. But why can't you, like, dig a little deeper into that? You know what I mean?
Oh, you could. Okay. And I'm sure the judge did, but that was the judge's decision.
What's the lesson here? I don't know.
Oh, she's going.
Don't take photos.
I was really waiting.
She's going Mark Close style. Yeah. That was always closest.
What's that mean?
Closest thing was always like, if you don't want the pictures out there, don't take the pictures. And he would scream that really loud every time we would do a story like this.
He's not wrong.
Also, the new suggestion from therapists, if you're having trouble, is whoever you're having trouble with, cut that person out of your life. Even if it's your parents, even if it's your kids, even if it's just for 6 months or 12 months, don't try to get along with them. Don't try to work it out. Just cut them out. That's the new go-to.
I've seen that, and I feel like it's being overused. And I'll just leave it at that.
Welcome back, guys. DGS and KMOX 334. So a couple days ago, we did a story about a guy who went to Disneyland every day from 2011 until 2020, 2,995 consecutive days. Stopped, I believe, only by the COVID outbreak. And he joins us now. His name is Jeff Wrights. Jeff, thanks so much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, man. So just tell us your story. I mean, there's so many facets to this, but just start from the beginning, day one, and walk me through your decisions.
Sure. It started out as a joke between friends fueled by a commercial from Disney. That simple. On New Year's Eve 2011, Disney ran the commercial on the Dick Clark ball drop show, talking about giving you an extra Disney day when they announced the Leap Day 24-hour event for February 29th, 2012. Mm-hmm. And we had already planned on going on January 1st. And while we were there, we both had the annual passes that had been given to us. So it was free. They were gifts that were free entertainment. Both of us at the time were out of work. And so we started joking around that how could it be an extra day if you didn't use the others? And so we decided to make a challenge out of it and have some fun. And so the challenge was just to go to Disneyland every day in order to hit 366 days to claim that extra Disney day.
Gotcha.
And so it just started out something fun like that. And with job hunting the way it is nowadays, it's not like the old days where it was all about beating the steps on the sidewalk going door to door. Nowadays, it's mostly virtual. Mm-hmm. So it didn't matter if we did job hunting morning, noon, night, or even from the park on our cell phones and stuff. So you know, you're going, you got pedometer apps on your phones and such, so you're logging exercise time walking around. You're working on your networking and communication because you never know who you're going to meet there. You might even run into someone that has job leads while you're there at the park. And then you can't help but go to Disneyland without having at least a few smiles. So it helped keep things in a positive outlook instead of, you know, sitting around at home being mopey about being out of work and all that kind of thing.
So so you accomplished that, right? You do the 366 days, and then what leads you to go, you know what, let's just keep going?
Having a good time. I ended up being lucky enough. I am a veteran myself of the U.S. Air Force, and I was able to start out with 98 calendar days left. I started as a 90-day temp here at the Long Beach VA Hospital. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, crap, am I even going to be able to do this? But luckily, my hours were early enough that I was able to keep going, where I would work, you know, 7 to 3:30, get off work and be over the park, you know, about 4:30, 4:35 o'clock. I was inside the gates of the park already.
Okay, so here's my question. Like, I love my job. I do a radio show. I love it. It's fun. It's easy. But there are days when I'm like, I don't want to go talk to these people. And I'm sure there were days when you're like, the last thing I want to do is go to Disneyland. Like, did that happen? And if so, how did you get past that?
Not really, actually. You know, because Disney was something that was fun for me. I never felt forced to do it. I felt like I enjoyed it. And it was one of those things that, because it's not like I had to go and spend the whole day. Or, for example, okay, you're coming from St. Louis. For you to go to Disneyland or even Disney World, you're planning a trip for, you know, a week, a month, or whatever ahead of time. And so when you get there, you're forced to make as much use of your time as possible.
Yeah, there's pressure, right?
Exactly. For me, I didn't have that pressure because my annual pass, when I had it, was – I had no blackouts, meaning that I could go any day of the calendar year as long as they didn't hit capacity and the gates closed. And so I could go, and I'd go for a minimum of an hour. But on average, I was running about 3 to 6 hours a day when I would go. And some days, like during the 24-hour events, I was there for an entire day or more at the park. So for me, it was just about, you know, more about getting out. So for you, getting out of the radio station and stretching your legs, you know, going to the park for a walk.
Yeah.
And that's how I looked at it. That was now my gymnasium. It was the mall. It was going out to eat, because once I started working, I could afford to purchase meals at the park more often.
Yeah.
You know, and if I wanted to do any special events and things, I could start to afford that kind of thing. Because in the beginning, when we started this, it was, you know, making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and we'd take them over to Tom Sawyer Island and have a picnic, or grab a Subway sandwich and we'd share a footlong together, you know, to help save money.
So, Jeff, at any point, I'm going to guess the answer to this is yes. So at what point did you yourself become a celebrity within Disney World? Like, at what point did people start going like, hey, it's Jeff?
Disneyland, I think the first time that we were noticed was probably day 100, which would have been the July 1st, I think it was, of 2012. We met one of the Orange County reporters on day 60 during the 24-hour event. We just happened to run into him when he was doing interviews with guests in line and such. And when he found out what we were doing, he stayed in touch. We became friends on Facebook. And so he was following. And so then he ran an article in the Orange County Register for that we had hit 100 days, that, hey, this is something real. And that afternoon, I got calls from the AP doing radio interviews like this with Oregon, and then it started bouncing all over. We got over to the park that afternoon, and it was so funny because we were walking with two of our other friends, and we're just coming up to the train tunnels. You enter in onto Main Street, and as we're walking in, a couple comes walking out and says, hey, it's the Disneyland people.
That's funny.
And we looked at our friends like, you guys set this up, didn't you? And they're like, no, we didn't know anything about this. They had seen one of the AP articles. And from that time on, it just got more and more. And then, you know, with me posting, I think it was in July was when I started using Instagram, and I'd use the handle I started using was hashtag Disney366, or my handle is Disney366 underscore is my account name.
Mm-hmm.
And I have over 9,000 images posted on there between photos and videos. I mean, you can see things like Johnny Depp when he surprised guests as Captain Jack Sparrow on the attraction. And I actually was there when he came out on the steps of the Dream Suite, or, you know, meeting other people or being there for the different candlelight readings when, you know, Chris Hemsworth and some of the other celebrities that were there reading, or even just getting to meet celebrities when I was walking through a park. I used to see and say hi to Kobe Bryant on a regular basis, or, you know, Poncherello. I saw Erica Estrada and others just off the top of my head. Or one of my followers that, you know, we became online friends was Crystal Hefner, Hugh Hefner's widow. You know, and we followed each other on social media. We chit chat on social. And then we actually, at one point, we met up and hung out in the park one night. And she had actually gotten an ugly Christmas sweater for Little Mermaid that I had worn, that was given to me as a merchandising idea from the company out of London. And so she bought it. And so when I saw she had posted that she was there, I said, hey, we should do a twinsie photo. So that was when I was like, okay, hold on a second. You're supposed to be the celebrity. You're the Playboy bunny and everything else. I'm just someone that goes to Disney.
Hey,
she would call me a Disney celeb. What's that?
So I understand that your streak just continued until COVID basically shut you down and ended the momentum. How many times have you been back since the parks have reopened?
I have only been to Downtown Disney two or three times. I have not been back into the park since the closure.
Oh, wow.
Once they refunded all of our money on our annual passes because it said, hey, we've been down too long. We're not going to keep the program the way it's been going. We're refunding everybody's money. And then they later came up with the idea of the magic keys that they now have. When they came up with that idea, I personally didn't like the idea of having to base my visits on making reservations, because of the fact that Disneyland is a local park for us. You know, I live 12 miles away from it. So, you know, the way it was before, it's like, hey, you had a rough day at work, or you just want to go out and grab a bite to eat. Let's go to the park. You know, we can grab a slice of pizza in Tomorrowland and we'll go hit a couple rides and head home. And the idea of having to make a reservation, for me, that kind of took that thrill away from it.
So
and,
most people start something like that because they want to get the attention. It sounds like yours was very pure and just, you know, going for a good time. So were you surprised by the reaction you got and how much steam it garnered? And what was the coolest thing to come out of all of that experience?
You know, just I think I got thrill or joy just from sharing the magic with others. You know, and when I would do like live walks and using Facebook or Instagram Live and things like that, I would have people from around the world. I end up becoming friends with other Disney friends from Australia and other countries, and they'd come and visit. We'd go to concerts and things besides just going to the park together. So, I mean, that was the biggest thing. And I think that when COVID hit, that was the biggest thing for me. It wasn't the fact that the park was closed and I couldn't go to the park. It was the people, the cast members and the other pass holders and the other Disney guests that I was really missing, and that put a damper on the situation for me. Disneyland as the theme park itself just happened to be that connection point. Like all the fans of your show, you know, when you guys go out and have one of your on-road events. You know, I used to work for a radio station when I was in the military up in Alaska. So I used to be part of the promotions team. So I know about that side of things. But getting to meet, you know, the DJ of the show that you like, you know, things like that. It was the same kind of thing. I had people come walking up to me that had just heard about my story. Some of them would follow or were followers ahead of time. Some of them had just heard, or, you know, from a family member saying, you know, hey, keep your eyes up for this guy. And they'd ask me for photos, or they, you know, a couple of people asked for autographs, things like that. I've been mentioned in, I think, two or three different books about Disney guests. And so I've had people ask me to autograph their books and such. And that whole idea of the photographs and the autographs to me was always funny because I never thought of myself as a celebrity. I was just another Disney guest that happened to go a little more often.
Very cool. Jeff, how do, if people want to find you to see all of this stuff, see the video, see the photos, how do people find you online?
The easiest way would be on Instagram. And my screen name is Disney366 underscore. You can also look up hashtag Disney366.
Very good.
You know, it's crazy. I mean, even Inside Edition came and they came here to the hospital. I'm actually on my lunch break talking to you guys right now.
Uh-huh.
And they came to the hospital and filmed it. And then they met up with me over at the park. And just after we got inside the gate, similar situation to what I was talking about, a girl happened to come up to me and she heard about me and knew and came up asking for photos and started crying. And this woman was in her 20s. She couldn't believe that she had gotten to meet me.
That's crazy. All right, man. Well, thanks for sharing your story. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. And I hope you guys have a great one. Have a good weekend.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. 352 DGS. Happy Friday to you. Rach, what do you got?
Okay, so earlier this week, we were talking about like bad customer service experiences, especially when you go to a restaurant and something like that, and how frustrating it can be. We were kind of bemoaning how things have just kind of changed, and it doesn't seem like they're going back to the way they once were as far as the kind of service you can expect. And I think all of that is still valid. But then I ran across this article, and it was about what you should do when you're going to get your hair cut and you don't feel like talking to the hairstylist.
Okay.
And it gave you all of these different suggestions of how you can politely suggest that you would like a silent haircut. And I thought, okay, on one hand, customer service has been more lax than it's been in a long time, and we're all just putting up with it. On the other hand, we're so spoiled and so catered to that it's like people are writing articles giving us tips on how to behave and how to ask for what we want. I mean, you think of the silent haircut. You can get in an Uber or a Lyft and click a button that says, like, I want a quiet ride. Please don't talk to me. You can order food and have it be contact-free delivery and all these different options. Like, it's like we're living on two ends of the spectrum. On one hand, it's things are bad and you just have to get used to it. On the other, we've never been more spoiled. Just kind of a weird time to be living.
Yeah, it's a good point.
What were those tips for them not talking to you?
One was like, just politely say you don't want to talk. Okay. I'm like, no one's going to do that.
Where do you guys fall? Like, I consider myself pretty personable, fairly charming. You were saying yesterday your superpower is if someone doesn't like you, you can bring them back, give me one lunch. Mm-hmm. So we're people, right? We do this for a living. But, and I don't want this to come off the wrong way. It's not like I hate everybody, but I don't enjoy human interactions as much as I used to, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think everybody went through that after the pandemic. Like most people, a lot of people were like, ooh, I kind of like not having to talk to anybody. But I think in this particular job, just because you talk so much a day, it's like when I go get my hair cut, like I just, that's like a,
right.
I get to relax. Mm-hmm. I don't have to say anything. I don't have to try to make small talk or tell a story or.
Well, you know what? I actually feel differently. I dread getting my hair cut because I feel like they always want to talk. They always want to chat. And I don't know what to say. And I don't really want to talk to them.
That is so shocking that you have.
I know.
Because you're so chatty and so
talkative.
It's
not shocking. It's a lie. There's no way that a human, even a corpse human, that you wouldn't talk their ear off.
I don't want to talk to them because I feel like it's like a weird captive thing where I can't move. I can't. Doing so, then they're asking me like,
"You mean like
you know,
how we feel in meetings with you?"
Yeah, and they're like, "What did you do today?" And I'm like, "Well, it's like 10 a.m. I just rolled out of bed and came here, and it's like I don't really have much to say. Like, what are you doing later? I don't know. Sit around.
That does
like,
not happen. Just, yeah, what you're saying
it just
right
doesn't
now
doesn't sound like you.
It
Thank
doesn't
you, Trish.
Happen.
It does. It happens at great, and I don't know what to say
it
to them.
Happens
I used to have hair, and At no point did anyone ever ask me, what are you doing later?
And then Andrew, his answer is, you've never answered like that.
I don't answer like that, but I don't like having to answer them. I don't want to talk.
Ask you a question, which they would not. But if they did, you'd be like, well.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records. This is a national contest.